أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. So dear brothers and sisters, where are we in the story of Nabi Sulaiman? We finished that first chapter. The first chapter was Nabi Sulaiman alongside his wonderful father, Nabi Dawood. We finished that chapter, his childhood when he had the protection of his father. And now we've moved to the second phase, where he assumes the responsibility of running that kingdom of God, the Islamic government. And as I said before, he's only 13 years old at this time. The verse is surah number 27 and verse number 16. I'll read the entire verse, then the Arabic, and then inshallah we'll see the English, and then inshallah we'll see what lessons we can get from the verse. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. ووارث سليمان داود وقال يا أيها الناس علمنا منطق الطير وأوتينا من كل شيء إن هذا لهو الفضل المبين. Is this microphone too far away? Yes? All right, we'll move it closer. Sulaiman inherited from Dawood, and he said, O people, we have been taught the speech of the birds, and we have been given out of everything. Indeed, this is a manifest advantage. What we learn from research is that the transition of power from Nabi Sulaiman, from Nabi Dawood to Nabi Sulaiman, initially, there wasn't much problems or many issues. Bismillah. Okay. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. It's good for me. So one salawat, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So the transition of power from Nabi Sulaiman to his son Nabi Sulaiman, relatively speaking, was smooth, at least when we compare it to the fitna that are going to come later on. So it's a smooth process, and in the beginning his kingdom is established, it's peaceful, it's powerful. Sulaiman alayhi salam is going to accomplish more than his father. He inherited a mighty kingdom. When we learn from Surah 27, verse number 20, God says about the kingdom of Dawood, وَشَدَدْنَا mulka. So we fortified his kingdom. He came into a powerful kingdom. But in addition to that, he's going to do much more. We're going to learn about some of these things later. But one of the things that we know that he had control of was the jinn. Another one was the wind. So if you can control the wind, then one of the things your kingdom will have is rain won't be a problem. Farming will be plentiful. You control the wind, and we'll learn later that the wind would sometimes be stormy, sometimes it would be smooth. He could control the wind. The jinn also, this also gave him a distinct military advantage over his enemies, over his opponents. Why? Because we'll learn later, the jinn actually served as divers. One of the things the jinn would do. So imagine if you had that. If you had the jinn at your disposal and somebody else tries to bring their navy into your waters, what could you do to them if you have jinn as divers, for instance? So he had distinct advantages, and we're going to see that he did much more than his father. He was able to accomplish more with the grace of Allah. Now, we start off with the beginning part of the verse. In the beginning, it says, وَوَرِثَ سُلَيْمَانُ دَاوُودُ. Sulaiman inherited from Dawood. What did he inherit? For sure, because there's a discussion amongst ulama about what he inherited. Some, when they look at this verse, like Ayatollah Makarem Shirazi, may Allah protect him, he says that actually every gift that you see that his father had, he inherited. If his father, for instance, he could speak and we would hear the mountains and the birds doing tasbih with him, then for instance, that would also happen with Nabi Sulaiman. Every gift was there for his father. He also had, in addition to that, his own gifts. That's one discussion. Others seem to have a different opinion, that there were some gifts that Allah granted Nabi Dawood and Sulaiman didn't have. But in either case, what he did inherit was the kingdom, his father's wealth and the kingdom. And that's important for us tonight. Why is that important? True Islam, brothers and sisters, is an Islam that's concerned about this world. True Islam is concerned about this world. It's concerned about the direction of society. Islam is not just a religion that's practiced by each person, brother or sister, in their own homes. Rather, Islam is something that we want to see manifested on the earth. We want to see everybody going to Islam, everybody having the opportunity to know God. We're upset when we see that there's oppression in the world. We don't feel indifferent towards it. So he inherited the kingdom. He was ruling the earth. One part of the earth, he had established the kingdom of God over there. Now, there's something that we hear, and when they're talking about political discussions, they tell us, they say that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. We'll tell them that actually you're right to a certain extent. Power corrupts the wicked. Absolute power, let's say for instance that Trump comes into power, or Clinton, either one, they're both wicked. Either one of these individuals comes into power, having that much power, an army like that, this kind of wealth, yes, it does corrupt. But if it's in the hands of the righteous, if it's in the hands of the Mahdi, if it's in the hands of Sulaiman, right, for the hands of the righteous, power doesn't corrupt. Actually, they're able to establish good through power. It's necessary that God mention in the Quran that Nabi Sulaiman inherited the kingdom. That's a good thing. That's not something for us to run away from. Yes, for tyrants, that's true. But for the righteous individuals, actually, that's the greatest of Allah's blessings. To have the righteous, God-fearing people have the kingdom, for instance. What happens when a righteous person gets authority in the land? What good can a righteous person, a God-fearing person, somebody like Nabi Sulaiman, what can they do if they have power? The Quran talks about it. And brothers and sisters, this is also for us. What about if you and I have authority? If there's a certain group of people who listen to us, who will be affected by our words, what are we supposed to do with that authority that we have? Verse of the Quran, Surah Hajj, so Surah 22, verse number 41. God speaks about the mu'mineen. He says, الَّذِينَ أَمَّكَّنَّاهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ. The believers are these people, that if we give them authority in the land, if they have a responsibility of guiding others, what do? Four things God mentions. أَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةِ. Righteous people establish the prayer. Not only praying themselves, inviting other people to pray. What else? وَآتَوُ الزَّكَاةَ. They give charity. They spend their wealth in the way of Allah. They encourage others to spend their wealth in the way of Allah. What else? وَأَمَرُوا بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَنَهَوْا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. This last part's a little bit tough. This is very different. It's not politically correct. What else do the righteous do? They bid the good. They forbid evil. They aren't indifferent to what other people are doing. You've heard the statement before. Don't judge. Whatever I do, wrong, right, my lifestyle, don't judge. Don't say anything. Be completely tolerant. They're not tolerant of you, but you have to be tolerant the other way. What does Islam say, though? If the conditions for amr bil ma'ruf and nahy an munkar are there, and a believer doesn't do it, let's say there was a believer, a brother or a sister, and their personal lives, they're very practicing. But when it comes to other people and them doing wrong things and the conditions for amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar be there and I not do it, then what happens? The hadith says this. The weak believer, alladhi la deena lah. God hates, the hadith, God hates that weak mu'min who has no deen. What do? Well, when they see people doing wrong, they don't say anything. They're indifferent. Who cares? I'm living my life. Enjoy yourself. Or maybe at the maximum, in my heart, I feel something, but I don't say anything. I just smile. This kind of person, لا دين الله. They have no deen. What are those conditions for amr ma'ruf and nahy an munkar? Four, brothers and sisters. Four conditions. If they're there, we're supposed to stop other people from doing wrong. The first, the person, what they're doing is a sin. They're abandoning one of the wajibat. If I'm not sure what they're doing, I don't know what they're doing is haram, I don't have a responsibility. What else? The person intends on continuing the sin. They're militant about it. They're going to continue doing this sin. What else? Is there effect for my words? There's sometimes when you say something, you try and stop the person, they're not going to listen to you at all. But there's other times, and when you speak to people, most people are good people. If families would do that, if husbands and wives would do that, if fathers and mothers would do that, if children would do that, in a very nice way, they'd speak up. Smile, salam, how are you, everything good? And then they'd say, well, look, what you're doing, that's incorrect, don't do that. If that effect is there, that's the other thing. And the other thing that they tell us, the last condition, is that there's no harm. Sometimes, if you do amr ma'ruf and nahy an munkar, some people are so militant in the wrong that they're doing, they'll stop you. They'll harm you. For instance, they'll burn your house down, for instance. Or they'll beat you up. Or start swearing at you. What they tell us is, if there is harm, brothers and sisters, then our responsibility is to weigh these. Which one's more important? There's some of the munkar, some of the wrong that's so bad, even if somebody's going to shout a little bit, we still have to stop it. But we weigh. We weigh those two. So if those conditions are there, we must do amr bil ma'ruf and nahy an munkar. This is one of the differences between those Shia who are really waiting for the living imam. Really waiting for the living imam, soldiers of the imam, they must do al amr bil ma'ruf and nahy an munkar. So one of the things that we want to keep in mind is when we present the message of Imam al-Hussein, later on, brothers and sisters, you're not going to be in this place necessarily. You'll move. Some of you, you may be running centers, or you may be having gatherings. You may be having circles of influence. When you're speaking to others about the message of Imam Hussein, brothers and sisters, we want to look at the words of Imam Hussein and introduce him how he introduced himself. There's a very famous wasiyah, or a will, or a statement the Imam gave to Muhammad Hanafiya. Imam Hussein gave to Muhammad Hanafiya. And he described why it is that he was doing this uprising. The words of the Imam, what did he say? He says, Inni lam akhruj ashiran wala batira. I didn't come out of Medina. I didn't rise up against the tyrant of my time. He says, just out of arrogance. Wala mufsidan wala zalima. I wasn't trying to cause corruption. I'm not an oppressor. It's not just that I have a lust for power. No. Why did I rise up? وَإِنَّمَا خَرَجْتُ أَطْلُبُ الْإِصْلَاحِ فِي أُمَّةِ جَدِّ مُحَمَّدٍ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ. He says, اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. He says, the reason I rose up was to correct my father's nation, my grandfather's nation. What else? أريد أن أمر بالمعروف وأنهى عن المنكر. I want to do أمر بالمعروف and نهي عن المنكر. I want to forbid the wrong and encourage good. That's why I did this. So Islam, true Islam, is like Nabi Sulaiman. It's concerned with the dunya, concerned with the direction of society. We'll go back to the verse now. The next lesson that we're going to get, inshallah, brothers and sisters, is a little bit about knowing our imam, the living imam, better. There's a hadith that tell us that the people who are alive in the last time, they are the best of all nations with a certain condition. Those people who are waiting, who are real, muntazirin, to the real imam, they're better than all believers with a condition. This is from Imam Sajjad. He says, إِنَّ الْمُنْتَذِرِينَ الْقَائِلِينَ بِإِمَامَتِهِ أَفْضَلْ مِنْ كُلِّ زَمَانٍ. Those people who are waiting the 12th Imam, whose faith in that hidden Imam hasn't been shaken, he says they're better than the people of all times. But he says why? He says for them, the absence of the Imam is the same as his presence.
These believers, the true believers, they know right now we're in the presence of the Mahdi. He's watching. He knows us. So what do we want to do, brothers and sisters? We want to know our Imam a little bit better. How? Let's look at the words of Nabi Sulaiman and what he says in the Quran. So back to the verse. وقال, Sulaiman speaking, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ, O people, عُلِمْنَا مَنْتِقَ الطَّيْرِ. He says that we have been taught the language of the birds. We have been taught the language of the birds. Brothers and sisters, one point, this isn't the royal we. When he's saying we have been taught, you know, sometimes people, they have a sense of grandeur that we do this, not the royal we. He's talking about himself and also his father. And he's mentioning Allah's blessings to them. One of Allah's blessings to us is that we know the language of the birds. Now, brothers and sisters, you and I, all of us know that animals communicate. Scientists will tell us, even you and I, when we look, we can see animals communicating to one another. We may see that birds are chattering or cheeping and they're communicating to one another. We may notice that sometimes their language with one another differs. If a bird's frightened, for instance, if a bird's excited, right, we can see these differences. That's not what's being taught over here. When he say that he could speak mantiq al-tayr, that he knew that the birds could communicate, no. Later on, we'll see what the birds will be saying. You're going to see ma'rifa of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In the conversation between Nabi Sulaiman and the hudhud, the hoopoe, you're going to see ma'rifa of Allah. That animal, the bird, speaking about Bilqis, about people being misguided, about traits of Allah. The instructions you see that Nabi Sulaiman gives to the hoopoe are not going to be simple instructions, things you tell an intelligent being. Later we'll read, inshallah, if Allah gives tawfiq, the conversation between Nabi Sulaiman and the ant. The ma'rifa of the ant is amazing. Right? So the conclusion that we come to, brothers and sisters, is that Nabi Sulaiman was given a divine gift. This is one of the miracles of God. He knew the language of the animals. He could speak the language of the animals. Now I said that we also want to do a little bit where we learn about our own imam. Our imam, we also believe, knows the language of the animals and also all human beings. We learn from the hadith. This first one is from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. He says, Inna Allah allamana mantiq al-tayr kama allamahu Sulaiman ibn Dawood. God taught us also the language of the birds. The hadith continues. He says the same way that Sulaiman knew that every moving being, every creature, Sulaiman could speak their language. In this way, we've also been taught. We know the language of the birds. The living imam is like that. What else does a living imam know? The living imam can speak to you in any language. You don't have to learn Arabic, for instance, to be able to speak to the imam. When he's here to save all of humanity, when you and I are talking to the rest of mankind, to people, to co-workers, what is it that you believe about the end of times? The imam, when you want to introduce that imam, the imam speaks everybody's language better than that individual. Hadith now, the person is narrating from the time of Imam al-Ridha, alayhi salam. He says that I was amazed listening to the imam and watching him speak. We have from other imams also. To everybody in their language, and he's the most eloquent. He knows their language better than them. Then he said that I told the imam, I said, oh, son of the prophet, I'm amazed how you know every tongue that's on the face of the earth. And the imam said something. He says that, Ana hujjatullah ala khalqih. I am God's hujjah, God's proof on his creation. وَمَا كَانَ لِيَتَّخِذَ حُجَّةً عَلَىٰ قَوْمٍ وَهُوَ لَا يَعْرِفُ لَغَاتِهِمْ. God doesn't take anyone to be a hujjah over a nation except if he speaks their language. How could I be the hujjah if I couldn't speak their language? How am I going to guide these individuals? More than that, brothers and sisters, not only is the living imam watching us, knows us, can speak our languages, and we can speak to him in those languages. In addition to that, the imam can read your thoughts even before you say anything. Remember, we said that these classes, meaning these lessons, are times for us to expand our faith, to come out and leave with a greater knowledge of Ahlul Bayt, feel closer to Imam Hussein than when we came in. How close do I feel to the Mahdi? How well do I know the Mahdi? How well does the Mahdi know me? The Imam can also read your thoughts. I want to give you a story about Imam Al-Hadi. This Imam, the person who's telling this story, is a person who became Shia. He was in Isfahan in Iran at that time, at the time of Imam Al-Hadi and the time of Imam Al-Askari. They asked him a question. There weren't very many Shias in Isfahan at that time. So they come to this person and they ask him, they say, how were you brought to the path of Ahlul Bayt? He starts to tell a story. He says that I was in Samarra. That was the center of the Islamic kingdom. At that time, the ruler was Al-Mutawakkil. May the curse of Allah be upon him. Al-Mutawakkil. He says that I had some business. It was a group of us. We had some business. We had to go to the capital. We go there and we see Al-Mutawakkil. We're going to see him. He says, at that time, we heard that Mutawakkil had ordered for Imam Al-Hadi to be brought into his presence. So I'm curious, I'm from another place. Who's Imam Al-Hadi? Who is he? They said that he's an Alawi. He's a descendant of Imam Ali, and this person is Imam Al-Rafidha. He's the Imam of the Shiites, the Rafizis. So he says, I was curious. I said, let me get to see him. Somebody's being brought into the thing. And he said, also I heard, this was also another part of the story, he said, I heard that Al-Mutawakkil was going to have the Imam executed. So this is an interesting personality. He's being brought. The security personnel are bringing him into the presence of Al-Mutawakkil. I wanted to see him. So I went and I stood in a place. I said that I'll see him as he passed. The Imam was riding on a steed. He says that at this time, the people were in rows. Everybody wanted to see him. And they're there standing, let's say, on both sides of the street. The Imam is riding. He says, as I see the Imam, the love of the Imam somehow it sat into my heart. I'm not even Shia, but just looking at this wonderful, godly person. He says that the love of the Imam came into my heart. And I said, in my own mind, I said, oh Allah, save him from the wickedness of Al-Mutawakkil. So I'm here and I'm watching the Imam riding on his horse, for instance, and he's coming through. The security are bringing him through, and I'm just watching, looking. He says, as the Imam came by, the Imam turned to me, looks directly at me. He says, Allah has answered your prayers, and you're going to have a long life. You're going to have many children and much wealth. He says, the heiba, the magnificence of the Imam was so much, my shoulders started shaking. I'm looking, I didn't even say anything to the Imam. He looks at me and he answers. My friends are standing with me. They're also there. They said, what happened? I didn't say anything to my friends. I went back to Isfahan. He says that I was a poor person. When I go back to my house, there's 1,000,000 dirhams in my house. Dirhams are silver pieces in my house. He says, in addition to my what I did for my business, which is outside, but I go in my house. He's telling the story. He says, right now I'm 70 plus years old. I have 10 children. He says, the Imam answered my prayer. Right? So brothers and sisters, because we're using the story of Nabi Sulaiman to know our Imam knows who we are. I hope that we're generous and that we say salams to our Imam daily. We speak to our Imam, make dua for our Imam, because the Ahlul Bayt, brothers and sisters, they're very generous. Those people who pray for Imam Mahdi know that he prays for you. Those people who pass salams to the Imam know that the Imam is returning your salams. Yes, we can't hear it. But the people of the end of times, the best of the Shia, are those people who have this kind of relationship with their Imam. So back to our discussion. وَأُوْتِينَا مِنْ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ Sulaiman now speaking, back to the verse. He says, and we have been given out of everything. إِنَّ هَذَا لَهُوَ الْفَضْلُ الْمُبِينَ Now that is a distinct advantage. That's God's grace. We've been given out of everything. Alama Tabatabai has a discussion here. He says, when he says over here that we've been given everything, he doesn't literally mean everything on the face of the earth. But every useful blessing, every need that one could have, every blessing that one could appreciate, he has it, alhamdulillah, at his disposal. So now, the last part of the verse is the him saying, if you've noticed from the beginning, he's saying that we've been given. We've been taught. Everything is about God. There's no ego involved. And then at the end, telling Allah how grateful he is for the blessings, he says that, إِنَّ هَذَا لَهُوَ الْفَضْلُ الْمُبِينُ, that this is definitely a clear advantage and a blessing. So now, one part of the lesson, because we're going to end early, and then inshallah we'll continue the discussion tomorrow, if Allah gives tawfiq. One lesson that we'd like to learn from Nabi Sulaiman is the lesson of zuhd. Not being attached to this world. Being indifferent to this world. Islam is a religion that wants to give us the good of this world and the next. But the mu'min, the muntadhir, the person who's waiting for the 12th imam, is somebody who's not supposed to be owned by the dunya. So yes, I may have wealth, I may have a house, I may have a car, whatever it is, I have these things, but they don't own me. Remember the story of Imam Ali alayhi salam, that when he came with the Lady Fatima and Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, to the houses of the believers, he told the believers that now is the time to stand up for my right. So brothers and sisters, what that means is that when the Imam gives that call, no matter what we have of the dunya, we're able to walk away from it. I have the dunya, but I'm not owned by the dunya. I'm indifferent to the dunya. And think just a little bit, brothers and sisters, how we are when it comes to the dunya. Are we able to walk away from everything? How are we when we face difficulties, challenges, business isn't working, health? How are we? Are we attached to the dunya or not? I'll give you a little bit of a story from Nabi Sulaiman, and we'll end, inshallah. Once Nabi Sulaiman was passing with that mighty army, with the birds providing a covering over his head, right? A legion of birds. The jinn and the men are walking alongside him, that mighty army, and he's moving through an area. They say, Marra bi'abdin min ubad bani Israel. So he's walking, and then he comes across an area that there's a servant, a worshiper from the children of Bani Israel. That worshiper, that person was given to a lot of worship, that person was devoted to God, was very impressed. And you and I, we would be impressed. We see that kind of an army marching, very impressed. So he said these words. He says, Wallah, the son of Dawood, O son of Dawood, he said that you have been given a mighty kingdom. Nabi Dawood hears this person. This person making this statement, he hears this person. And he says that if a mu'min does one tasbih, this is worth more than all of the kingdom of Sulaiman. One tasbih. Why though? That's the interesting part. Why is it that one tasbih said with ikhlas is worth more than that kingdom of Nabi Sulaiman? This is the words of Nabi Sulaiman in this hadith. He says that the tasbih will remain, whereas the kingdom of Sulaiman, as great as it is, one day it's going to pass. So this is one lesson for us, brothers and sisters. And inshallah, Allah will give tawfiq. I want to discuss this a little bit more. The idea of zuhd, not being attached to the dunya, although Islam is a religion that grants us this world. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah allati halat bifana'ik. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر الأهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين صلوا على محمد وآل محمد.